Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 170 for November 4th, 2011. I'm recording a day earlier than usual on Thursday because tomorrow Darlene and I will fly to Texas for the wedding of our niece Brianne in College Station. I'm always careful to load my Kindle up with good reading material before a trip, but my guest for this week's interview has got me beat by orders of magnitude in preparing his Kindle and a backup Kindle for a solo nonstop circumnavigation of the globe in his 36-foot sailboat. Eric Loss, who is 25 years old, will be at sea for 7 or 8 months, he figures, but that will not mean endless hours lounging on the deck reading his water-protected Kindle.
It always surprises me whenever I'm doing sort of ocean crossings and big trips, how sort of little free time you actually have, because there's always something to do with tweaking the sails of the boat or something is broken that needs to get fixed. So it probably comes down to only a couple hours, maybe an hour or two a day that's really free for reading in.
In news, there's just one story this week, but it's a big one. I'll take a close look at the just-launched Kindle Owners Lending Library. For the tech tip, I'm going to take a look at personal documents. I spent the evening trying to refresh my memory on how to send documents using email to my two Kindles. I'll tell you how that went. And in content, I'm going to give you a sample of some of the pearls that I found in going through the thousands of books that are now available at the Kindle Owners Lending Library. So in news, Amazon today, Thursday, November 3rd, announced yet another tempting reason to sign up for Amazon Prime. That's the $79 annual membership that gives you and your family free 2-day shipping or 1-day shipping for $3.99 on eligible items, plus free instant streaming of more than 13,000 movies and TV shows. Now, as of today, Kindle owners with Prime can also borrow and read for free up to a book a month on their Kindles with no due dates from a selection of more than 5,000 titles, including 100 past and current New York Times bestsellers. The new Prime benefit is called Kindle Owners Lending Library, and I can report that it resulted in at least one new Prime membership sold today. It turns out that I'm a guest on Darlene's Prime account, which means I have to log in as her to see the free videos. Not a big inconvenience, but I was planning to switch things around when her membership was up for renewal, since she has no interest in watching videos on her Mac. But that sort of a workaround isn't available for me to take advantage of the Kindle Owners Lending Library, since my Kindle is registered to an account that has guest status on Prime. I was not able to use the new service unless I upgraded my Prime account from guest to full Prime. So I did. $79. I was sort of calculating that if I do a book a month, I'll make that up just on the books. But somewhere in the limbo between trying to borrow a free book, which the one I wanted to try was The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins, and maybe before my full Prime membership was in place, I never did receive the book on my Kindle, and I could never see it in the manager Kindle archive. When I called Kindle support earlier today, the tech couldn't find it either, and after a couple of hours while he was working on it and then called me back, he said the entire system was having difficulty. So it's possible that first day volume caused a glitch on making those books accessible on the Kindle Owners Lending Library. The new lending library is available only to U.S. customers and can only be accessed from a Kindle device, not from the various Kindle apps, including the Kindle for iPad app or the Kindle for iPhone. It apparently works on all Kindles, all the way back to the original, and of course it is going to work on the Fire, which is the newest member of the Kindle family. You can get a book from the list of more than 5,000 titles once a month, and there is no due date, but in order to select a new book after a month goes by, you'll give up your ability to read the first one, so you can only be having one of these books on your Kindle at a time. The fact that there is no due date means you could conceivably borrow one book and keep it forever, but that's not a likely use pattern. You can read one of these books in a month, and you can read 12 books a year. If you do that, if you manage to do one each month, you'll get 12 books for your annual membership. It looks as if you have several Kindle owners sharing your Amazon account the way Darlene does with her sister and some friends, any book that any of them borrows from the lending library will be available to read on all the devices sharing the account. And also, if you make notes and highlights in a book that you get from the lending library, they will be available if you later decide to buy the book or borrow it again after you end the current borrowing period. That's like the system of borrowing that Amazon just started recently for the public libraries. Paul Biba at Telluride did a handy tally of how many books are available at the Kindle Owners Lending Library in the various categories. For example, there are 1,346 in fiction and 78 books in literary fiction. That looks like a separate category. 149 in mysteries and thrillers, 3,865 in nonfiction, 223 in biographies and memoirs, and 456 in religion and spirituality. The titles that were most commonly mentioned in coverage of the list are Stephen Covey's The Seven Habits of Highly Successful People, The Hunger Games Trilogy, Fast Food Nation, Moneyball, Liar's Poker, and Water for Elephants. To get to the books available for free borrowing, you start at your Kindle's homepage, press the menu button, and choose Shop in Kindle Store. As a shortcut, you can do this even if you're in the middle of reading a book. If you hold down the Alt key and then press the Home key, you'll go straight to the store page. Do not pass Go. At the store page, you'll see several browse options, and you need to navigate to the one that's labeled See All. And then from there, this will bring up a menu of choices, and the last one that you'll see is labeled Kindle Owners Lending Library. Once there, you'll see the Owners Lending Library list. It's arranged by best-selling, which means The Hunger Games is at number one, but you can change the view to subcategories and drill down into a category that you're most interested in. For me, that's literary fiction. When you find a book that you want to borrow for free, you just press the Borrow for Free button, which says underneath it, Prime Members Only, instead of the Buy button. You can also buy any of these books if you want, but they show up with the Borrow for Free button as well. Because of that glitch in my effort to borrow a book, when I chose Borrow for Free, I got a message saying, Len, you've already borrowed a book this month. You'll be able to borrow another book on December 1st, 2001. You can feel the ground shift, at least I can, when Amazon makes an announcement like this. For one thing, none of the six biggest publishers have any books among the more than 5,000 being offered in the lending library. In a Wall Street Journal post, Jeffrey Trachtenberg reported, quote, several senior publishing executives said recently they were concerned that a digital lending program of the sort contemplated by Amazon would harm future sales of their older titles or damage ties to other book retailers. Amazon itself, in the company's press release, seemed to be putting it to the holdout publishers by specifying the terms under which participating publishers are taking part. The release stated, quote, titles in the Kindle Owners Lending Library come from a range of publishers under a variety of terms. For the vast majority of titles, Amazon has reached agreement with publishers to include titles for a fixed fee. In some cases, Amazon is purchasing a title each time it is borrowed by a reader under standard wholesale terms as a no-risk trial to demonstrate to publishers the incremental growth and revenue opportunity that this new service presents. Given Amazon's success in disrupting established industries, it's understandable that so many observers assume there's a grand strategy unfolding here with Amazon Prime as but one component. A tech writer named Christopher Mims wrote a post titled, How Amazon Can Afford to Give Away Books Free. That's at MIT's technologyreview.com site today. He referred to the Netflixization of books and wrote that the move from an ownership to a rentership society has been proceeding apace and nowhere more rapidly than in media. Books have been a holdout, but that's just changed. Mims quoted Slate's Farhad Manju as saying that Amazon customers who join Prime increase their spending at Amazon by an average of $500 a year. I don't know if Amazon's actually ever announced that, but Farhad, I guess, thinks that that's a good number. But Mims says, quote, "That's just one of the many interlocking dynamics behind the business strategy of this announcement. In addition to the Netflixization strategy, he sees Amazon leading the way to an entirely new source of subsidy for media in the void left by real estate, auto, and classified ads that subsidized media when newspapers enjoyed monopoly status in their communities." He asks, could the 21st century be one in which media are subsidized as a bolt-on to consumer goods, as in Amazon's new scheme? Books have never been subsidized before except through the sacrifices of their authors. Maybe it's time they should be. There will be more reading of the tea leaves of this move, and I hope to have some guests on the show that will help us to understand the historic significance of Amazon's announcement today. Meanwhile, if you have a Prime membership, you'll have fun, I think, picking up your Kindle and browsing through the brand new library that's available to you for your first free borrowing. As John Cogg wrote at Me and My Kindle today, I see over 5,000 ebooks, and they're ebooks that I've actually heard of and ebooks I actually want to read. And if you have succeeded in holding out against Amazon Prime so far, today is certainly a good day to consider New York Times tech columnist David Pogue's assertion that, quote, "Amazon Prime is looking like a better deal every day, damn near irresistible, in fact." And even though I'm a business school graduate myself, I did like Pogue's concluding paragraph, which read as follows: "Amazon is thinking outside the business school box, way outside. And you gotta love anyone who comes along to shake things up." This week's tech tip is a chance for me to refresh my grasp of how to send personal documents to my Kindle. I made some kind of a mistake last week because a document I thought I had emailed to my Kindle keyboard never arrived. It was a draft essay that I wanted to review for a writer friend of mine. And in the past, I've developed the habit of reading her work on my Kindle because I find I do a better proofreading job and reading for content on the e-ink screen. I realized I must have messed up the email addresses, so I went to the Manage Your Kindle page at Amazon.com to remind myself which email addresses I had assigned to my two Kindles. So it turns out to send documents to my Kindle Keyboard 3G, the email address that I created is lenkeyboard@kindle.com, and to send items to my $79 Kindle, it's lenkindle@kindle.com. Nowhere on the Manage Your Kindle page does it mention an email address ending with @free.kindle.com. But in my experimentation this evening, I learned that there are still two email addresses that work with that ending, namely lenkeyboard@free.kindle.com and lenkindle@free.kindle.com. After experimenting with sending documents to my Kindles by email tonight, I can only think of one scenario where I would still need to use an address with free in it. That would be if I wanted to email a large document to my Kindle Keyboard 3G, and for some reason it was not on Wi-Fi. In that scenario, if I sent the big document to lenkeyboard@kindle.com without the free in that address, it would be delivered using the WhisperNet over 3G, and I would incur a charge of 15 cents per megabyte for the transmission. The most that would cost me is a dollar, because I've set that as a maximum charge for 3G transfers in the personal document settings area of Manage Your Kindle. Still, you know, maybe I didn't want to spend even a dollar for a document to arrive on my Kindle Keyboard 3G. In that case, I would email it to lenkeyboard@free.kindle.com. What's nice is that with the 3G connection on, if the Wi-Fi wasn't on, Amazon does not send the document over 3G, but it does use WhisperNet to send a message to my Kindle saying that a document was sent but cannot be fetched until Wi-Fi is turned on. Now, for my $79 Kindle, which does not have 3G, the only address I have to remember is lenkindle@kindle.com. But I found out that if I email a document to lenkindle@free.kindle.com, the document will arrive on my $79 Kindle, just like a document sent to the shorter address. I'm not sure there's any usefulness to knowing this, except that if I want to send something to free.kindle.com for old time's sake, I can. Each time I sent a test document to one of my Kindles, a copy of it showed up in my archive at Manager Kindle. So that part of the new system is working. I have just about 0% of my 5 gigabytes of available storage used so far. That's how much space I have for personal documents under the new system. If you haven't tried sending a personal document of some kind to your Kindle, I recommend that you try it. You may well find that there are documents that you receive as attachments from email or just that are in your work process on your computer that you'll be able to read better on the Kindle. So I think it's a good idea to spend some time getting comfortable with this procedure so that at the drop of a hat, if you want to send something to your Kindle, you'll know how to do it. Eric Loss, 25, is a 2008 graduate of Bowdoin College in Maine. And by the time you hear this podcast, he may well have set sail on a solo nonstop circumnavigation of the globe in his 36-foot boat, appropriately enough named Odyssey. Eric's mother, Katie, is a loyal listener of the podcast, and she had asked me if I could recommend a good cover for his Kindle to keep it dry on the voyage, which he expects to last approximately 8 months. So I did send him some covers that I think he'll be taking with him to protect his Kindle and a spare. I spoke with Eric on Monday, October 31st, by Skype, reaching him in California. I began by asking the obvious question, why is he doing this?
It's something I've sort of always wanted to do, sail around the world in some form or another, and I've always wanted to sail around Cape Horn. And in the last couple of years, what really got me started on it was reading a couple of different books by people who had done the nonstop circumnavigations.
Mm-hmm.
And then got thinking about that, and I figured if I'm going to try and sail around the world, I might as well combine them all and do a nonstop circumnavigation of the world by the Great Capes, which is sort of the Southern Ocean crazy weather route. So it's sort of just a coalescing of goals over a couple of years.
So you're leaving from where in California then?
I'm leaving from Los Angeles.
And then where do you go from there? You go down the coast of South America and then...
Yep. So from LA, I'm basically heading pretty much straight south down to South America, then turning left around the tip of South America around Cape Horn, and then from there sailing across the South Atlantic to South Africa, around South Africa, across the Indian, then around Australia, New Zealand, and then basically back up across the Pacific to Los Angeles again.
And how long do you think it'll take?
Right now, I'm thinking it's going to be sort of somewhere between 7 and 8 months, depending on weather.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say nonstop, you're leaving with enough supplies to last you that long?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm in the middle of dealing with all the food right now, actually. I hate dealing with food. It just drives me up the wall. But I took up the first load of cans yesterday and filled the car entirely full and didn't even put a dent in the food supplies. So,
what kind of things will you be eating?
It's mostly a lot of canned food. Taking a bunch of sort of rice, lentils, and dried pasta, dried stuff like that, and then the rest of it's pretty much cans. I think I'm taking something like 800 cans of food.
Wow!
So like, there's canned meat, canned vegetables, canned pretty much everything.
How much water do you have to take?
The boat can hold. I've got about just over 100 gallons of water tankage on the boat, mm-hmm. which isn't quite enough to make the trip, but I can catch rainwater on the sails and then refill the tanks that way. So it'll be enough. I mean, with 100 gallons of water, it'll probably get me 2/3 of the way through the trip if I'm using a lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be using salt water for pretty much everything but drinking.
Yeah. Now tell me about the boat. It's 36 feet long.
Yeah, it's a 36-foot Islander. But it's built in 1977, which is kind of an old, definitely an older boat. But I've done spent a lot of time doing work on it, repairing and replacing a lot of stuff. And the people who owned it before me had replaced a bunch of the rigging and things. So it's in pretty good shape for its age. And it's a nice boat. It sails real well. It's not super heavy. It's not like a super light race boat. It's just a pretty moderate sort of conservative boat for doing something like this in.
What's the longest solo that you've done up until this?
I actually haven't done any like really long solo trips before. I've crossed the Atlantic twice and I've crossed the Pacific, but all those trips have been on crude boats.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of a new thing, but I mean, I can sailing the boat. I can sail the boat solo. I think the hardest part about it, I think, is going to be sort of sorting out a sleep schedule.
Yeah.
Just because it's going to be sort of, I think, the biggest chunk of time I'm going to be able to sleep, especially in the first week or two while I'm getting offshore. It's probably me an hour or two at a time, and then wake up, check it that nothing's around, and go back to sleep again. But I think
And
I'll be able to get through that.
the boat can sail itself while you're sleeping.
Yeah, I've got two different autopilots on the boat, and those are actually pretty much going to be steering the boat constantly. It just makes life a lot easier because I can let the autopilot steer while I go handle the sails or what have you.
Yeah. I told my wife about this and said, "Man, this is amazing. This guy's going to do this." And her reaction was, "Well, he's crazy. Why would you, do such a dangerous thing?" I know your mother listens to the podcast, and she seems supportive, but what do people who care about you think in terms of the risk that you're taking?
Mostly supportive. My mother and I had some discussions about safety issues, and she was freaked out a lot about it at first, but I've convinced her that I'm not like trying to kill myself doing this trip, that I'm doing everything I can to be safe about it. And I think, I mean, there definitely are some risks involved, but I've done pretty much everything that I can to try and mitigate them. I mean, the boat's in good shape. I've got jack lines, so basically anytime I'm on deck on the boat, I'll be wearing a harness and clipped onto the boat so I can't go overboard. And there's, I mean, as lo pretty much as long as I don't, the, I mean, the big other big risk, I mean, storms and then running into shipping traffic. But once I get far enough offshore, there's not a whole lot of shipping, so that's not as big of a concern. And then just dealing with storms. And the big thing I've got is sort of going for me there that even 10 years ago, people didn't have is that I'm taking a satellite phone that I can get weather downloads through, so that I can, and I mean, I've got a radio too that I can get weather over, so that I can try and sort of get out of the direct hit of any of all the storms that are coming, which so I can get like a 7-day forecast. So that makes a big difference in just avoiding nasty, nasty weather.
Yeah. How about pirates once you get around Africa and you're headed toward India?
I'm not that worried about it, just because I'm going to be so far south. Most of the piracy is up closer towards India, and I'm basically going a straight line from Africa to Australia.
Right.
There's not really enough traffic down there to make it worthwhile for pirates to come down there. So.
And what have you done for work prior to setting out on this adventure?
Well, I spent a couple of years of a couple different things. I did some work on deliveries. I worked in the Caribbean for past, I guess, 2.5 years, working on a like a 90-foot schooner that was a school ship for college students doing like semesters at sea. So I worked on that boat as a mate, and then I ran it as captain for a year. And then this spring, I decided I was sort of done with it. It was a really fun job, but I'm sort of needed to change. And then came home and sort of started in on this project.
Let's turn to the Kindle and the reading. First of all, you'll have some time to read in this?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm not going to have oodles of time. I think I'm probably bringing more books than I'm going to be able to get through because I've just been loading up my Kindle. But I mean, there's definitely going to be periods of time where there'll be time to read. I mean, once I get the boat sort of settle down and on course, then I can get some ch chunks of time to read when I'm not sleeping. And it's sort of one of the things that people oftentimes say is sort of like, aren't you going to get bored out there? Or like, what are you going to do with, I mean, be at sea for 7 months straight? And that, I mean, the reading will help with that, but it always surprises me whenever I'm doing sort of ocean crossings and big trips, how sort of little free time you actually have, because there's always something to do with tweaking the sails of the boat or something is broken that needs to get fixed. So it probably comes down to only a couple hours, maybe an hour or two a day that's really free for reading in.
Yeah. How many books have you got on the Kindle so far?
Let me check. I think I've got, it's not a huge amount. I think I've got like 180 or 190 books on it right now.
Right. What types of books?
All sorts of stuff. I'm a big fan of like sci-fi books, so I've got a bunch of stuff like that that I've been getting. I actually went also, I like mystery books, and I've also been rating the Project Gutenberg and getting free ebooks. So sort of all the classics and sort of just a sort of a smattering. Just I figure, I mean, I don't really want anything. I don't want to just end up with like nothing but mystery books, because then I'll get bored of that pretty quick, so I can switch it around.
Yeah. Will you have internet connection using that sat phone?
Yeah, it's a pretty slow connection. I think it's like a 9.6K modem, so it's, I mean, slower than slow. So I'm gonna have email access through that, and I can use it for a phone too, but mostly just sort of for text emails. So I'm gonna be, I guess I actually probably could get books over, but I'm mostly just gonna use that for getting weather and then just checking in with friends and family.
Yeah. And you won't be able to be posting to the blog or anything during the trip.
Yeah, I will.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can post to it just by sending emails to it.
Ah.
So I'm probably not going to be sending pictures, but can send text updates of where I am and how I'm doing.
And that's what's the URL for the blog?
It's HTTP SVOdyssey.blogspot.com.
Okay. And now, is that the name of the boat? Are you calling it the Odyssey?
Yeah, the boat's named Odyssey. It was actually already named Odyssey when I bought it, so it was a good enough name, and I don't want to change the name because that can be bad luck, you know?
Yeah. Well, and maybe the there was some destiny in buying a boat with that name.
Yeah, that's what my mom said when I got it. So I figured name was good.
That's a word to the wise. If you're buying a boat, take the name of it seriously. You, if you'd bought one that was called Paddling Around, you might have had a different life.
Yep.
Well, now, and so you've got I sent you those covers, but you th what's the what kind of wear and tear is the Kindle likely to receive on a circumnavigation of the globe?
Think it'll be that bad. I mean, like, I've had this Kindle for the last 2 years when I've been living in the Caribbean on boats, and I mean that boat's obviously that's definitely drier than this trip is going to be. I think the biggest issue is, I mean, it's going to be there's moisture in the air, so any sort of corrosion that that's causing, and then anytime there's rain or storms, especially with storms, the boat's going to leak. And if I go up on deck and come back down, I'm going to come back down and get everything down below wet. So sort of, I think the biggest threat is probably water damage, what the covers are going to help with.
Yeah.
And I'm actually going to bring a second Kindle along with me,
Good idea.
just as a backup, that I can just seal up in a couple Ziploc bags and maybe stick inside one of those covers and just stow it away in case a wave hits my Kindle while I'm trying to read or something.
Yeah. And just have the same books on both Kindles.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Do you highlight and take notes when you're reading your books on your Kindle?
I actually don't. I've got a Kindle that's got a keyboard on it. And I really have never messed around with the highlighting, taking notes or anything like that. The most I've ever really used it for is I used to actually use it for internet access all the time. Because when I was in the Caribbean, it was real nice that I could get it over the 3G and check my email and things even when I wasn't near Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But I've never messed around really that much with the highlighting and note taking.
Now, will you have 3G on this one, and will it do you any
No, I
good?
mean, probably within 24 hours of leaving shore. I mean, unless there's some real strong cell phone stations in Mexico, I'm not going to have 3G access.
Right. So you won't be able to be buying a book when you're off the coast of Africa or something.
No.
How about just mental condition in reading accounts of other people that have done this and just sort of knowing your own rhythms? What's the risk of going crazy and how do you avoid that?
So interesting. I think one of the I mean, the only person there's only one person I know of who's tried to do this and is like actually gone crazy. And it was back at the very first, I can't remember, I want to say 1968, the very first year that people tried to sail around the world alone, the big race. One of the competitors had a bunch of issues. He shouldn't have left to begin with, but because of sort of like financial pressures, and he basically had his whole house and life and business online as collateral for the mortgage on the boat. And if he didn't win the race, he was basically going to lose everything.
Oh.
He ended up going crazy and committing suicide, and they found his boat drifting around in the South Atlantic
Oh.
after a whole series of false posts, of false radio reports where he told people he was winning. But most, I mean, nobody else, I don't think, has really had any actual serious psychotic issues. I think it will be kind of interesting, and one of the things I want to sort of see is how it does affect me mentally. I'm not that worried about it. I tend to be kind of a loner, and I can deal with being by myself. But it definitely is interesting reading some of the accounts of people where they sort of like a roller coaster of I don't, almost mental states that people go through where everybody they're excited about it when they leave, and then there's sort of a almost a couple weeks up to like a month or 2 months where they get just sort of everyone seems to get sort of depressed and down, and they realize that they're going to be alone, and it's they sort of have to like battle through this section of just feeling really like just I think it's almost like withdrawal from socialization. And then it seems like most of the people who successfully have done it get through that and then come back and have sort of almost get over it and almost reach almost, I don't know if it's a acclimatization, but almost like a euphoric state where they sort of feel they're get used to being alone and almost fall in love with it. And then they talk about how much happier it is, and they all the sea and everything around them, they sort of feel at one with nature. It's so kind of an interesting thing, and I'm curious to see how that experience affects me.
Yeah, I would think, do those people have a difficult time with reentry into their regular lives?
Yeah, I think so in some ways. I mean, one of the things I actually haven't followed that many of these guys, like the solo circumnavigators after their return to regular life. I know that some people who do sort of shorter solo trips tend to be like really, I mean, kind of makes sense, but really chatty and garrulous once they get back on shore for days at a time because they haven't had anybody to talk to. But switching back to sort of an American lifestyle again after being at sea of any kind is tough. I mean, when I flew home on this last job, even just for holidays for a week at a time, just going through the airports was always a kind of a culture shock from being on island where the population of the whole island was probably fewer people than were in that airport that day. But, and I mean, this will just be a little bit more extreme.
Now, in addition to the blog, do you have any aspirations to keep a journal or in some way prepare for writing a book when you're back?
Yeah, I've sort of played around with the idea. I don't know if I'm going to or not. I'm taking a bunch of notebooks. I'm going to try and sort of keep a daily journal and see if I can mess around with making it something interesting and worth reading. But I don't know if it turns out interesting or not. One of the things that sort of from reading this other literature is that there seems the books that are interesting seem to sort of fall into two camps where there's either books where there's some sort of horrible external trauma that happens, like the guy's boat almost sinks and he's fighting for his life and battling storms, and that makes the interest of the story. Or there's some of them, there's a lot of sort of internal, like sort of like a psychological drama where it's they are like great in sort of internal developments, and it's all about sort of their mental game. And a couple of books I've read where neither of that happens, and it's really kind of boring. So obviously, I don't want to come up with something that's not that exciting. And I'm hoping that I don't have any great external traumas. I don't want to be sinking or anything like that. So we'll see how it turns out.
Can you recommend some books of this genre that you've consulted that people might be able to follow up and read?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably one of my very favorite book, and actually one of the authors that really inspired me, is Bernard Montessier, and his book The Long Way. He was sailed in the very first circumnavigation, the race of like the Golden Globe race, and it's a fabulous book. He's a French guy, and he ended up actually he was winning the race, and got to the point where he had to turn. They started out in England and turned to go back to England, and he decided that he was sick of civilization and didn't want to go back and deal with going back to shore again. So he just kept going halfway around the world again to Tahiti, where he had some friends, and sort of made a huge name for himself by doing that. And he was an early environmentalist too. And it's a really interesting book because it goes from being a very sort of prosaic account of the trip, and as it progresses, it becomes more and more about sort of his inner battle with whether he wants to go back to shore or not, and about and sort of environmentalism even.
So he sailed 1.5 times around the world.
Yep.
That's amazing. Do you think there's any risk that you might face a similar temptation to just keep going?
Maybe. I mean, I think I'm probably not that tempted to do it. I've certainly thought about it, but I don't think it'll happen.
Well, now you're 25 years old. Do you have a significant other that you're leaving on shore as you go off to do this?
My girlfriend Shanley she's actually been helping out a lot with this boat prep, and I think she thinks it's a pretty cool trip and she's been really into it and really supportive of it. But that's definitely going to be sort of a tough thing to deal with too.
Yeah, because this is even when you think about people that head off and do active tours of duty in the military, it's I don't know that they're I suppose maybe they do end up being as much as 8 months away from home at a time. So it's maybe not that unusual, depending on what kinds of activities people are doing.
Yeah, but it's definitely going to be a challenge.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about the picture on the blog that you did just for the test piece. It was a series drogue, and it was, you said it had stopping power. What was that you had the photo of?
So basically, a drogue is some sort of device that you use. It's for basically slowing down the boat in storms. And that drogue that I had on the picture I had on the blog, it's basically, I want to say it's probably a 350-foot long rope. And sewn along it, those, all those little colored dots are basically these little canvas cones that with the wide end of the cone facing the boat. So as you drag it behind the boat, they all open up and basically act like little windsocks to slow the boat down. And the theory behind it is because there's lots of little ones that if there's big waves, that they, even if part of the rope is out of a wave or like in a crest of a wave, that the rest of them will still be in it and helping to slow the boat down so that you're not surfing out of control.
I see.
And when I took that picture, I had just taken it out and tried it out outside LA Harbor just to see how it worked. And it did before I needed to actually deploy it in a real storm.
Yeah. And so it did the job of slowing your speed down considerably.
Yeah, slowed down a huge amount. And getting it back in again actually was a huge fight. And I think in an actual storm, once that thing went out, I don't think there'd be any way of getting it back on the boat until the conditions massively moderated. So it's sort of a last ditch thing.
I see. Now you're planning, you said depending on the weather, you would be leaving in really just a few days, Sunday or Monday.
Yeah. Right now, I mean, it's still 5 or 6 days out. So I don't know quite what it's going to be like, but it looks like right now that there's sort of some big wind is going to be coming through. A system is going to be coming through on Saturday, and it looks like there still should be some wind left around on Sunday to get out of here. And it's been, this whole week is actually, right now there's no wind for the last 3 or 4 days, and I don't want to leave, obviously, when there's no wind, because it's kind of silly to just go out and bob around in front of LA Harbor for 3 days waiting for the wind.
Well, that's when you'd be glad to have 180 books on your Kindle.
Yeah, that's true.
You're hoping to have less reading time, at least in the early going.
Yeah, definitely. Getting down across the equator, I'll definitely have a couple days or maybe weeks of that trying to get through the doldrums, but I'd rather postpone that as much as I can.
That's great. Good. Well, I've been speaking with Eric Loss, who is within a few days of a solo circumnavigation of the globe. Thanks a lot, Eric.
Thank you.
I want to wish Eric a safe and satisfying journey around the world, and I'm going to be checking regularly at his blog for updates via that sat phone he mentioned. You can follow along at svodyssey.blogspot.com, and I have a link to that in the show notes. And since I spoke with him, he's already added a new post with a photo showing the impressive amount of food that he was loading onto the boat to get it ready for that long trip. For content, I'm going to list a few books for you that I found at the Kindle Owners Lending Library, pretty much at random, to give you a feel for the possibilities. In the history section, I found Guns, Germs, and Steel, The Fates of Human Societies by Jared Diamond, Charlie Wilson's War by George Creel, Kon-Tiki by Thor Heyerdahl, that's one I remember reading when I was a boy, and U.S. Army Hand-to-Hand Combat, with the author for that volume listed as simply Department of the Army. Also, Indignation by Philip Roth. In Biographies and Memoir, I found Home, a Memoir of My Early Years by Julie Andrews, Let's Roll by Lisa Beamer, Man on Wire by Philippe Petit, and My Remarkable Journey by Larry King. One thing that confused me as I was looking over the list is I saw quite a few VOOC titles, and that's a kind of a combined video text book that was out a while back. I thought they had had trouble or maybe had gone out of business, but they show up quite frequently in the list, and I don't know how well those would render on e-ink Kindles. They may be there pretty much with the Fire in mind, and since the Fire is a Kindle, it is one of the devices that is going to be available for the Kindle Owners lending store. I can see how it's going to be a lot of fun at the beginning of each month to stroll through these categories and pick out my free book, but I'm going to have to speed up the usual time I spend to finish a book to take full advantage of my new $79 Prime membership. I just noticed that Prime and the new basic Kindle each cost $79. I wonder if that's a coincidence or maybe another hidden element of Amazon's plan for world domination. In any event, Prime is looking like a good source for content for the Kindle for the foreseeable future. I'll start comments with a couple from Alan McDermid from Benson, Arizona, in his snowbird status. First point he makes, he had seen reassurances that the browser for the K3, which is now called the Kindle Keyboard, would still be able to browse the whole web. But I now see where that is not true. The first time I tried to browse via 3G, it popped up and said I need to use Wi-Fi for anything other than ordering stuff from Amazon. That is something you should check on the Fire when you're able. I realize the browser is experimental, so they can change it anytime they want, but I'm still disappointed. Now I have to find a Wi-Fi connection to get my email, whether on the MacBook Touch or Kindle. That's the first I've heard of that. So, I've said before, I think that it's not that big a surprise given that the web was always described, the browser was always described as experimental, but there had been some early indication that although the new Kindle e-ink versions were not going to have unlimited browsing, that the Kindle Keyboard or the 3G would. But Al has discovered that that's not the case. He also had some comments based on my mention of Eric Loss's trip. Al has had over 30,000 nautical miles in his Freedom 28. That was long before the Kindle. And in those days, the process was he would row over to another cruiser and trade with whatever he was willing to trade, as his bookshelf at the time only held, let's see, I think that's 12 paperbacks at a time, and some of them were books that he really needed, like navigation books. So he's got, and he also had some experience with Ziploc bags and found that they always leaked, and even when he double bagged them, they weren't that good protection for the book. So I hope those covers that I gave Eric were going to help him out. Jim Van Donsel emailed. I got an interesting email from Amazon this morning saying that the new Neal Stephenson novel, Reamed, that I had recently purchased was missing content. They offered to update the book wirelessly on my Kindle if I replied yes to their email. They warned me that updating the book would delete any bookmarks, notes, and furthest page read, and that the update would arrive within 2 hours. 4 hours later, the update had still not arrived on my Kindle, so I called customer support. I love the Call Me feature, by the way, and I asked them to push it out to my device, and 1 minute later, I had the updated text. On a related note, I've been disappointed by the number of typos I've found in ebooks I've bought from Amazon. Not only hyphenation errors, which I can almost forgive, but missing words or sentences. In one case, the massive and classic novel Shadow Country by Peter Matheson had the word lawman sprinkled in dozens of random places in the 1,000-page text. A sample sentence from page 280. Excited by fresh ideas about how to shape the unfinished history and roughed out biography, he had lawman started a new set of notes. He did a search inside on the Amazon website, and these errors didn't appear in the copy, so it looks like the version that was sold on the Kindle isn't the most up-to-date copy, or that the version somehow got mangled in the Kindle conversion process. So that's from Jim Van Donsel. That's it for this week. We had another good TKC hangout on Google Plus this Wednesday, and I'll go ahead and schedule another one for Wednesday, November 9th at 2 p.m. Denver time. If you want to participate, just drop me a line at podchronicles@gmail.com if you're not already on the hangout circle that I've created for these events. Lance Ulanoff, editor-in-chief of Mashable, a great technology site, will be my guest next week, and I'm hoping he will help me evaluate whatever improvements Barnes & Noble is going to announce at their New York press conference on Monday, November 7th. I was not invited to attend that press conference, so I'll be depending on live blog accounts to follow along. If you have comments about anything that I've talked about, see, we're back in Denver. I'm glad we had a chance to hear my great-grandfather's clock join the proceedings here, chiming the hour of 10. With that, I'll sign off and tell you this is Len Edgerly from downtown Denver for the Kindle Chronicles. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.